Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HG. This is our Wednesday evening Under the Radar podcast. I'm your host over here, Chad Sherwood, joined at my side by David Griggs, who's probably unhappy with his position.
I'd rather be on the other side. Can you move me over there?
No. And down below, we've got back joining us from Bracketeer.org. We have Rocco Miller as well.
Can't you move me over there?
Good evening. And as I'm ignoring David, this is our Under the Radar podcast. We are recording this a little after 9 p.m. on Wednesday the 17th, so some games that go final after we started, we may not be able to get to, unless they go final, you know, as we go along here. But first of all, this is Under the Radar. Since David's being annoying already, I'm going to tell you what it means to be under the radar.
I just don't like being over here. I want to be on that side.
What we do on the Under the Radar podcast, for those that have never joined us before, is we talk about the other normally 22 this year without the Ivy League, 21 conferences. These are the conferences that generally are single bids, although they could definitely can. And this year, as in many other years, one or two of them might put multiple teams into the NCAA tournament. But these conferences are not the Power Five conferences, the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, or SEC, nor the other five what we consider to be multi-bid conferences, which are the American, Atlantic 10, Big East, Mountain West, and the West Coast Conference. Did I nail them right?
You did. Wow. I always have trouble with that, so it's good that you took it. Yeah.
A single other disqualifier, any team in the top 25, no matter what conference they're in, is not considered under the radar. So we are not going to be discussing Loyola Chicago other than in passing reference tonight. We will be talking about the rest of the Missouri Valley Conference, including Drake. Notably, both those teams, as we record this, are in tough battles. So when we get to that conference, maybe those have gone final by that time. Maybe they won't. Who knows? Did I catch everything?
You did. That was a great intro, Chad.
Oh.
Way better than what I normally do.
Why did we let you do it then?
I don't know. I mean, how many times do I have to mess up before you actually let Rocco or somebody else do it?
I'll tell you what. What we like to do is start out with a feature conference, and I like to surprise you guys with it. Although, Rocco, I think it's a conference that you actually have some notes on. It's a conference that I think we've been kind of ignoring a little bit this year because it didn't even play for half the darn season. And it's one that I think, you know, maybe merits a little more time than we've given it, especially because it has the, according to the net ratings, the number 11 team in the entire nation in it. But
okay.
We'll talk a little Patriot League as our feature conference tonight, with a couple of teams here, both Colgate and Navy, that I think are interesting teams that I honestly have no idea how to possibly evaluate these teams heading into the NCAA tournament, especially Rocco, if Colgate makes the NCAA tournament, because guess what? Heading into the Patriot League tournament, at least, they will have played exactly three teams all season. Army, BU, and Holy Cross a shitload of times. That's it. That's their season. That's their resume.
I don't know how to evaluate them going into the Patriot League tournament.
Yeah, here's Colgate. Here's what they've done. Look at them on the left there, and look what they've got coming up. But Rocco, your thoughts on Colgate and the rest of this conference?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. How do you evaluate them? You really can't on a conference level or a national level. So it's a team, you know, coming into the league and into the season, picked to win. They won it the regular season last year. Were upset in the championship by BU. But this team has got the most experienced roster. They have beaten Army now. They lost to them once overall, but I think they're 3-1 against them now. And that actually shows that, you know, they're somewhat good. Army hung with Florida and they had some other nice showings when they got their non-conference. If Colgate does in fact win out, which we probably expect them to, and Navy, the second best team, wins out, it's an interesting situation because they play an uneven amount of games. Colgate, just by winning the one extra game, would actually get to play the championship game at home if that all came together where they both just kept winning. Seems a little unreasonable, unfair, because they never had a real way to break that tie except for one extra game for Colgate. But overall across the conference, you know, I think the other interesting story is Loyola Maryland and Lafayette have met six times. In Loyola Maryland's two wins, they've blown them out. But the other four times, they've lost four heartbreakers. So if you look at aggregate scoring, Greyhounds are dominating. But if you look at overall record, it's 4-2 for the Leopards. And I think those games have been awesome to watch. There's some good talent across the league. It's a shame we didn't get to see non-conference. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the committee ultimately does as far as seeding this champion, whether it's Colgate or somebody else.
Yeah, a couple notes first, Army and Navy got some non-conference games, and Navy the most notable when Road went at Georgetown, so that shows you a little bit. The other thing, as far as the conference tournament goes, 8 teams in this conference tournament, it will be 2 teams per division plus 2 what I'll call wild card teams. So as it stands right now, it looks like Holy Cross will definitely not be in the conference tournament, given that they're 3 losses behind everyone else for the last wild card. It's probably going to be Lehigh or Loyola battling for the final conference tournament spot. David, go ahead.
Yeah, can we go back to the team sheets there, Chad?
Yep.
Okay, a couple things here. I know that you don't need me to explain that Colgate's net of 15 is fool's gold.
11.
But it is a little bit of fool's gold. For starters, they've played 9 games and 6 are on the road. From a percentage standpoint, that's the same as playing 20 road games in a normal season. So the net, which in the TVI part of the net, is factoring in all those road wins. Another thing, Army has lost 6 games this year, and 4 of them, I believe, is it 3 or 4, have been to Colgate. So, like, when you adjust for that, it thinks Army is 9-3 instead of 9-6, and it's giving them all this credit, again, in the TVI portion of the net for winning those games. The other half of the net is the adjusted efficiency, and they're winning rather largely. Like, they went to Boston and blew them out, blew out Army that 101-57 game, beat Holy Cross by 40. So this is a little bit of fool's gold. If you're wondering how the hell is Colgate up in the net, the computer doesn't look at the team sheet the way you and I and everybody else does. All it knows is that 2/3 of their games have been on the road. 1/3 of their games have been against teams with 75% of their wins once you take those away, and they've been blowing them out. So I know Rocco's kind of a stat guru as well. Anything else to add to that?
No, I think you summed it up very well there, David. I think, the net thing, I think, has to just be ignored. You know, I think the three of us know that it's essentially about the results of the net teams to sort them all out. But the actual net ranking, especially in an anomaly situation where there's no non-conference schedule, it's meaningless. So. Yeah. A fun story. Good to see them at the top every week and every time you refresh it. But besides that, a meaningless stat. Until they play a non-conference, then maybe it gets interesting.
Yeah.
The Colgate's first non-conference game would be in the first round of the NCAA tournament if they make it that far. That would be it. It's very, very strange. But let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule actually here in the Patriot League before we go on, and we see, we saw on the other screen also, Colgate's supposed to be hosting BU for a pair of games this week, while Navy is supposed to be at American, both weather and COVID.
How do you evaluate teams that only play 2 or 3 teams?
Yeah, the other thing I think here too is, you know, until the league makes any kind of alteration, Americans only played 4 total games, or 2-2. And the league guidelines say you have to play at least 12 to be eligible for the tournament. So they did add a game against Loyola Maryland midweek. So they have 5 left, but they're still going to be 3 short.
Rocco, but my understanding actually is it's the NCAA rules that you're supposed to have 12 games in before the conference tournament. If the conference tournament would count as your 13th to even be eligible for the NCAA tournament, there is a waiver process, and I believe next week is the deadline for a waiver for a team that can't reach that number. Yeah. And I don't know if the conference would let American into the NCAA, into the Patriot League tournament, if the NCAA granted American that waiver.
Right.
Honestly,
they would have to do a waiver there too, I think.
Yeah, and honestly, given that the Patriot League chose for no non-conference play, I'm not as sympathetic to this waiver as I would for a team like New Mexico State or something like that, that tried to get the games in November and December and just couldn't get them in.
Right. Yep. And Colgate and Bucknell have already clinched spots.
Yes.
According to my data here, but it looks like if American's not invited to the Patriot tournament, that opens up a place for maybe like a Holy Cross to squeeze in.
Well, I think if we take off American, look at Loyola and Lehigh both getting in, I think Holy Cross still is the 9th team then, but still left out. Again, only 8 into the conference tournament.
Right, but they could still play their way in with a maybe a couple wins, perhaps. Or
Yeah, if they can go and sweep Army this week, but I haven't seen anything of this Holy Cross team all season. So
they just lost to BU actually, so I think they play them again.
Well, they play BU.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, they play BU. Okay. Whoever they're playing.
They've been playing BU more than half their schedule is BU.
When in doubt, they're playing BU.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so that's where we are in the Patriot League. It'll be fun to watch this last, I guess this last 2 weeks. We actually got the Patriot League's, I've got them scheduled to finish up on February 28th at the moment. So we've got another week and a half or so of Patriot League ball if they keep going the way they're going. They could maybe spend another game or two in there, depending on when they want to start the conference tournament. But let's jump over to the American East and kind of go through the rest of these conferences in alphabetical order, where, David, we did get Vermont on the court, and they went ahead, and while it wasn't blowouts, they did sweep Stony Brook this past weekend.
Yeah, and not the most impressive showing, not the best Stony Brook team, but they
I think it was impressive coming off of 3 months of no playing or whatever it's been for the Catamounts.
It's been about, 18, 19 months since, long shutdown. It's still a two-horse race between them and UMBC. I'm still leaning a little bit more towards UMBC. If you're talking about what they've done on the court, if you're talking about who has better pieces, I still like this Vermont team. I mean, it wasn't overwhelming, but they hadn't played in, I think, about 36, 48 months. And just to see them get a couple games in after about 82 months.
Yeah, I don't know, Rocco, there's really much other stories in this conference at the moment. Maine shut down for the season. Everyone else will be in the conference tournament, assuming they can stay healthy. The conference normally took 8. They will take all 9 eligible teams this year, though.
Correct. Yeah, and today they actually revealed their even more details on the conference tournament. So it will be a 3-week tournament now. The regular season will end this Sunday, and it will start on the 26th, which is the day after the Horizon starts. And it'll be a 3-phase approach. So the top 2 teams will be Vermont and UMBC. So all they're playing for this week is for either number 1 or number 2. And then, but no matter what, mathematically, they are in the top 2 spots. And so then you'll have a pod, I believe it's with 3, 5, 7, and 9, and then a 3-team pod with 4, 6, and 8.
Yeah.
Double check that. But those will be the 2 pods for the first weekend. And then we have semifinal, head-to-head, and a third weekend of a championship game, winner-take-all at the higher home court.
So what we can do is
really sore.
As we can cross off these Wednesday games. They've crossed those games off. They actually had scheduled games out for next week that they've now taken back. But the big thing, though, is tomorrow it's a nationally televised game. They're going to play again Friday, also Vermont at UMBC.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perhaps a pair of championship game previews here. And I think Vermont would need to sweep to get the top seed. I think with split would go to UMBC with a better overall record by a game. Is that right, Rocco?
I'll have to double check that. Okay. I don't have that in front of me, but could be. Sometimes it's net ranking in some of these leagues, though, and that would not be good for UMBC.
Just look at UMBC with the one extra game having been played. Yeah. See how that plays into it.
And then what they do is that they take the winning percentage and take the square root of that and then take that to the third power. And that's the tiebreaker for who gets in the third pot as opposed to the team of 4 pot.
Okay.
Why don't they just go in the normal order?
So, Chad, I've got Vermont at 9-3 as well. So maybe our information's off. I don't know.
Okay,
I think they're tied right now.
We will have to double check on that. You could be right. We could be missing a game somewhere in here as well. So
they've only played 12 total. So
they've played 12. I've got them at 8-3, so they should be 9-3. So we will see about what that problem is. And which case, if it goes by net, Vermont would have the tiebreaker then.
Yeah. So we'll get back to the audience in a future episode on that.
Yeah, we'll definitely have that cleared up in a day or two here. Let's move on, though, to the Atlantic Sun Conference.
Yeah.
Conference.
Big news.
Go ahead.
Kennesaw State won a game.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
They did.
And they busted out. Well, they only won by 8, but they were up by 20 plus in that game. So I was proud of the
Owls. And this is a Stetson team that Chad thought was going to go to the Sweet 16.
No.
I mean, he was real big on this Stetson team.
I had them in the Sweet 16 of the ASUN tournament.
Okay, yeah.
And how about David, Liberty swept North Florida, but Bellarmine, a pair of road wins at North Alabama, and in the driver's seat for that one seed now, well, at least in the win column.
Great story for the Knights. They've rattled off 10 straight wins since losing their first two conference openers. They have, I believe, a series with Liberty coming up, which will determine who the one seed is and who the one seed is, since, well, Bellarmine participating in the tournament, Liberty is probably, I suppose if Bellarmine won the tournament, then Liberty would go. Is that how the ASUN intends to do it?
Yeah. So just like a few years ago when Stetson got to the final, if they had won it, North Florida was going to go.
So if the standings hold as they are and Bellarmine ends up the one seed, if Bellarmine or Liberty win the tournament, Liberty goes. And so a Bellarmine-Liberty championship game could be meaningless.
Yes. And in a lot of ways it would be. So, but still a really good story for Bellarmine. I really hate that it's not a normal year, because it would be fun. At least I think it would be to see them in the CIT, which they are certainly eligible for. But you know, year one, we knew they were going to be good. If you had followed this team at all, the Division II level, they were a national D2 powerhouse, had won a national championship, were regularly ranked in the top five. So it's not as fun as it's been to see. It isn't that surprising that they've had this kind of success.
I thought we had the Liberty Bellarmine series. I guess that must be coming up for the final weekend, Rocco.
It's the final.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So that won't be this week. I said Liberty will be hosting North Alabama. Bellarmine will be at North Florida. Not exactly the easiest trip for Bellarmine, and you know, if they want to, and they probably need to sweep that series if they want to have any shot at that one seed with that Liberty series coming up in the final week.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Rocco, over in the Big Sky Conference, Eastern Washington has taken the lead, although it's only tied in the loss column still with Southern Utah, who did not play this past week.
Yeah, Eastern Washington's playing at a high level here. They have now whipped out seven straight wins. They swept Montana State, who for the longest time was in charge of the conference. Now they've lost four straight. And not only did they sweep Montana State, they did it in Bozeman, and they won both games by 16 points. So they took it to the Bobcats, you know, in a road environment. That's a very impressive sweep for the Eagles. And all their toughest competition is behind them. They split with Southern Utah back in January. They'll get Montana in a interesting home-away series. They play they'll get them in Cheney tomorrow, and then they'll go to the Grizz on Saturday. And then two home games at Idaho State in the last week. So it's looking good for the Eagles, I think, to get this regular season trophy, barring a big surprise loss somewhere, which I don't see.
Yeah. David, you still in the Montana State bandwagon, or have we finally convinced
you? No, I'm all in on Eastern Washington, just like I was at the beginning of the year, which I was. I got off of it for a little while. But no, Eastern Washington looking like the team that I think that we all – were expecting. They were a little bit disappointing at a conference, but really on a roll now. Really nothing to add to what Rocco said, but just to sort of further his point, they've played well. The toughest part of their schedule is behind them. They really are running downhill.
Upcoming schedule there, they are hosting, they're playing, I guess, home and home with Montana this weekend, if that's a go.
Correct.
And, you know, I guess we got to keep
Southern
an eye
on Utah's back.
Southern Utah back there hosting Sac State, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
And then Weber is hosting Northern Arizona. So Weber should have a couple of wins this week, unless something bizarre happens.
Idaho still in contention for the Centenary Award. OAR checking in at 352. That's getting pretty close.
Yes, they might be the worst team in D1. In fact, there's only 347 teams that played this season, 345 left, with a couple of teams that didn't have even finished the season. So really, really bad season for Idaho.
Almost got it done.
Almost beat Idaho State the other night.
And then that crazy ending. Wow.
Yeah.
Just a quick note back to Vermont. Rocker was correct. They are 9-3. There was an error in the scoreboard up there. So they are in a dead heat with UMBC at the moment. These next 2 days will decide the conference regular season title. Awesome. If either team can sweep. Right. Big South Conference is coming up on the screen right there. And Winthrop, they had, we were talking up this series, Rocco, at Radford, and they went into Radford and they got it done, and they, you know, they broke a bit of a sweat, but not a huge one, I don't think.
No, not as close as I thought it would be. I thought at least one game would come down to the wire, and it really neither one did. It was all Winthrop in the first game by 16, and then the second one they managed to pull away, played suffocating defense, dropped from an 80-point total in game one down to a 55-47 rock fight win there at Radford. So, again, another team with their biggest test behind them. They've split with Asheville, swept Radford. Gardner-Webb was way back in January, so I think with High Point and Hampton left, they should cruise. Now, I guess the only question left was if they could get a non-conference game. It looks like that's probably out the window with a tight turnaround between the two series is left and then the Big South tournament.
Yeah, and David Radford, a shocking loss tonight at home to Gardner-Webb, which is now Radford's not even guaranteed the two seed in the conference tournament. Well, Winthrop, right. We can congratulate them. They have clinched the regular season title.
Yeah, and normally that would be a big deal because of the campus sites. Pull Winthrop's team sheet up if you could, Chad.
Okay.
Real quick. Yeah, and again, 18-1 overall. Only three out of conference games. It's too bad that they couldn't get another one. It's too bad they couldn't get North Carolina. In looking at it here, it is a tough sell. Either you or Rocco. I'll go with Rocco. It's debate class. Argue that Winthrop belongs in, or can you? Is there anything there?
You can't, because there's precedent for teams to make it through their entire season and only have one loss from a very below the radar conference like this. Get in. They've got a tier two win against UNC Greensboro, who's another conference leader. The Little Rock win unfortunately went downhill when Little Rock turned into a mediocre Sun Belt team. Yeah. But also the Furman win at home by 16. You know, if Furman goes on to win the SoCon tournament, they could actually win the SoCon regular season now too. That actually carries some water. And then the two Radford wins currently sit in Q3, but those are probably going to slide out after their loss today.
Yeah, but
I think you can make the
remember,
argument.
You got to remember, argument. If you're evaluating them for that large, you got to evaluate them as a two-loss team. And that's the...
Oh, right. Yep, and that probably... You're right. I think that does shoot them out, especially with not a full season. Like, if you had a full season, they might be something like 30-2.
Yeah.
In this case, they're going to be like 23-2 or 24-2. It's and their net, I agree with you guys. The net usually doesn't mean squat for your own team, but in this situation, if they were for some reason in the top 40 or top 30, they would have to be more and more in the conversation. At 68, it's a little bit easier to dismiss them, I think.
Yeah, and part of the reason we were really big on Little Rock coming into the year, and we were really big on I think Greensboro too.
Right.
And was it Greensboro that like they essentially in 2 days? They won games against both those teams, and I was like, holy crap, here we go.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that they've been disappointing, but it's just in a normal year, they would have had more better opportunities to get inside the bubble. So I'm kind of with you. I think one of the games they need to win better be that last one.
Right. If they lose at the buzzer to Radford or something in the final, I mean, I think they could stay in the conversation. But
I think they will be in the conversation. I'm not keen on it happening. Absolutely. Before we even get to that point, they've got to win these last four regular season games.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's get them there. Let's get them through those four first and jump over to the Big West where David, UC Santa Barbara took the trip out to Hawaii and got the sweep in the island. And that was huge for this red hot Gauchos team.
Yeah, real big. And those were like the second game in particular, I think was pretty hard fought. They needed overtime, but they got it done. The Gauchos, they were a little bit anemic at first, but they're exploding onto the scene now. I like them more. I was really all in on the Eaters, but now I'm all Gauchos. UNC Riverside, still the best story. Gauchos, probably the best team.
Yeah, and that, on that Riverside story, Rocco, they got the home win by a blowout fashion on Friday against Irvine, but couldn't get the sweep.
couldn't get the sweep. Irvine really responded in game two. It was a great battle, possession by possession. They got some nice love getting on ESPNU late Saturday night. In fact, Saturday night was just phenomenal because they both started at 9 o'clock West Coast time. It was pretty late for you guys out there, but just to have both those games going at the same time, for the longest time, Santa Barbara had it in hand and Hawaii charged back in only the way Hawaii can, in a crazy ending on the islands and sent that thing to overtime. At the same time, Irvine flipped the game on Riverside. And anyway, it was just a great way to end a 120 something game Saturday.
Yeah.
College basketball in this league. I mean, this is the best. They're the 16th best league in KenPom right now. That's their best year in over 5 years. And these four teams, plus the element of Hawaii, I also think UC Davis is better than people think. They just haven't been able to play. And Big West tournament is going to be awesome. I can't wait. And Santa Barbara is really, really solid. Their starting five I think all five of them could play and play significant minutes on a Power Five team. It's a really good looking team.
Yeah.
Interesting battle of this weekend, Santa Barbara hosting Bakersfield team that we haven't discussed much, but they're sitting right up there at the top, near the top of the conference.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, this is a fun league. It's always been one of the favorites, and I'm glad to see it having the kind of success that it did. I didn't realize it had been 5 years since they'd been this good, but you know, just 2 years ago, the Gauchos, or not the Gauchos, the Eaters won a game in the round of 64.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, 2016, they were ranked 13th is the best year since then. So
yeah, a lot of good rivalries out there. Speaking of good rivalries.
Speaking of games here, let's build the Colonial, where James Madison continued their red hot play with a pair of 4-point wins over Hofstra, while Northeastern is still a team that couldn't keep pace, getting the split against Towson, David.
Yeah, real good wins for James Madison. I still think Hofstra has a lot of good pieces. And, you know, it went from being three games. That was a big swing because it was a chance for Hofstra to really play catch up and maybe get back into the hunt for first place.
They're gone now. Six losses.
Yeah. So JMU, I still like this Northeastern team. I know that they got drilled by North Carolina tonight, but there's no shame in that. I think that I like JMU better now, all of a sudden.
Yeah, Rocco, I think I'm all in on this JMU team now. You know, Northeastern, I agree with David. You can't count the Carolina game, but the Towson game really, really disappointing.
Yeah, very disappointing loss to Towson. Towson's having a poor season, and I've watched them play a few times. There's a couple of games where Towson's just given up. So maybe just the target on Northeastern's back got Towson fired up for that one, but – in James Madison's case, obviously a lot to love. They've rattled off seven in a row themselves. And that first game against Hofstra, they were down huge.
Yeah.
And they furiously rallied to stun the Pride. Now, a big concern here for James Madison, halftime or around halftime, all CAA player, possibly player of the year in the league, Matt Lewis, went down and never came back to the game, didn't play the entire second half. And that, I think, speaks volumes that the Dukes were able to win without him. But there's still no prognosis on his injury. We'll see if he plays this week again. I'm sorry, they don't play again until next week, luckily.
Is the Delaware series is off?
Yeah, no Delaware series. Their next matchup will be Drexel on the 27th, unless they can find a non-conference. And I think they're keeping it tight-lipped on Matt Lewis. It's been 3 days now, and there's been no release or news.
I have officially the official listing is a giant question mark. That is the official listing on Matt Lewis. So.
But that's obviously a game changer for their prospects. If you're looking for a sleeper team, I mean, I think the jury's still out on Elon. They haven't played a game.
They won one. They won their first conference game this weekend. Come on, Rocco. That's a hell of a sleeper.
That team's in a coma. That's not a sleeper.
Okay, so this is a deep sleeper, but you have to take a serious look under the hood here, and you'll find some things. So some of the losses, they've got beat by Greensboro, swept by Northeastern, swept by James Madison, and obviously swept by Delaware, which is bad. But they haven't played a game at full strength yet, and they're finally going to start getting to full strength. They beat Charleston in this last game. I loved what they had coming back this year, and their coach, Mike Scragg, in his second year, I think very underrated. Anyway, if James Madison has the injury and Northeastern can't get up up back to full speed. You got to figure out who that third team is. I'm not saying it's Elon, but I just think a team like that could sneak up on people in the CAA tournament.
Well, we find out about Elon with if assuming they get these two games against William and Mary, who is a middle level team here. See what they do against them. They got to sweep them. It is a home and good home coach, court calendar there at least.
Yeah, they do have a good
coach. Rocco, let me stick with you as we jump over to Conference USA, where Western Kentucky got a couple games in finally. They did, easily take care of Rice. But I think the story was that was Louisiana Tech, was it not?
It was. And I think on last week's show, I said they would win at least once and possibly sweep, and they did get the sweep. And it was just one of those things where UAB, they hadn't played anybody that tough all year. And they had to go into Ruston. And Louisiana Tech dominated, I think, both games. I thought UAB fought really hard in game two, but La Tech kept them at arm's length distance down the stretch and pulled away with a 5-point win. And I think this La Tech team, they're up to the top. They're an 88th ranked team in KenPom today. I think they're a team certainly capable of winning the CUSA tournament. They've beaten Western Kentucky once in a split. They beat Marshall once in a split. And they've won, 9 of their last 11. So a very dangerous team. They only have Middle Tennessee and Rice left. So they could go in winning 13 of their last 15 to the curtain.
They do need to move up another spot there in the West Division standings and avoid that first round game, though. They really could use
save a day.
They just need one UAB loss to get there, though. So and it went out. But David, the upcoming schedule in CUSA, allegedly at least, who knows, is Western Kentucky at North Texas. I think those games are off. Are those off?
Oh, they are. Ooh, I was about to make the point.
I don't know. Rocco would tell us.
Okay.
What was the matchup one more time, Jack?
Western Kentucky at North Texas.
Oh, yeah. We're on. And
we are on.
That's a huge one.
Okay.
Now, stay tuned because they that series taking place in Denton, obviously Texas is having all sorts of issues and delays and postponements. It could get moved. You've already seen some things shuffle to Sunday, Monday. You look for that, but let's just hope they get it in Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, I think. And can we pull up those two profiles real quick, Chad? Western Kentucky, North Texas. Okay. And again, Western Kentucky, a team that I think is courting the bubble. And while North Texas isn't necessarily inside the bubble, so it might not look like it would jump off the page that much, this is a team that's 8-1 at home. And if Western Kentucky goes down there and gets both of those to where, like, they have only one other loss other than Western Kentucky, I think the committee does see things like that. In fact, I know they do. Yeah. They've told us that. That would be a win that they probably get more credit. Well, not probably, would get more credit for than what some of the amateur bracketologists are just counting up quad one, quad two wins. Right. If they get both of those.
Well, they would be, as long as North Texas stays 72, those actually would be quad one wins now on the road. Yeah. Although with those losses, I expect North Texas would probably drop it to a quad two loss.
Yeah. But they would still be quad really two good wins on that resume. And I think that would put them, if they're not there already, inside the bubble, maybe not in on the first ballot, but I don't know. We've got a committee guessing expert here. Do you agree that those would be huge wins, Rocco?
Absolutely. And I think Western Kentucky's in a pretty solid position. Obviously, they want Alabama to keep steamrolling because the strength of that win, it needs to appear as a top two seed line win. If Alabama drops a couple and they go down to like a 3 or a 4, it's still great, but it's not the same as it is today. So they've got to continue to improve on the net ranking. Again, it's only a thing, I think, when it's these types of teams that just don't have the comparable results to a top 10 conference, and you've got to start looking at extra factors. If you get into the top 50, which might be unrealistic, they're 73rd or 75 right now. You really want to keep pushing hard to get into that top 60 or 50. Not that there's a set rule, but there is certainly a precedent on that stuff.
Well, you got to remember the KPI and the SOR. While we think while we think Joby's J&G should be on the team sheet as well, those two numbers are on the team sheet.
Those are good.
They are very good numbers.
Those are inside cut line.
It's not on the team sheet, but it is in the room.
Yes,
because they have the internet.
So it's the survival board, Dave.
Yeah, the survival board is definitely in the room. That has been established.
Wright State, another team that's rolling by almost a pair of identical scores. Actually, they scored 92 in both games, 81 and 82 for Milwaukee. Wright State went and swept and just is rolling big time now, I think.
Yeah, they are. And it says something when you're underwhelmed and you still win by 11 and I think 12 in those two games. I know some odds makers or whatnot had them favored by like 18. So it just speaks volumes about how efficient these Raiders are playing. They clearly have the most talent in the league and they're playing very, very dominant basketball right now. Now, I think this weekend they're going to play a double down in Northern Kentucky, and those two teams, the last few years really get after each other.
Yeah. That's a fun one.
Yeah. And the Norse, you look at the Norse lately, they started pretty poor, 5-8, 3-5 in the league. But since then they've won 7 of their last 8. The only loss coming in OT this past weekend at Green Bay, which an underrated road trip. That's always a tough place to travel to. So we'll see. I think NKU might be up for at least one close game out of these two.
Right. Meanwhile, Cleveland State, who did slip up against Detroit, is at Fort Wayne. And we see those Friday and Saturday games up there on the screen. That's it for the Horizon League. The Horizon League is done after Saturday's games. And we will have a Horizon League bracket and an America East bracket by the end of this weekend, which is pretty wild. But
yeah, it is.
And kudos to the league. I mean, if you look across the board, 12 teams, and everybody got in at least as long as the games go off this week. But right now, everybody's got at least 13 games played. Compared to a lot of other leagues, that's a darn good success rate.
Yeah, if we get to 15 games played for Robert Morris, for most leagues, that is a full season.
Yeah.
The Horizon League had up to 20 games this season, just the way they scheduled it. But
and it's not like all these schools are super close to each other. Some of them are, but there's some tough trips in this league.
Yeah. Dave, why don't you take the next conference?
Okay. They haven't quite gotten in as many games as the Horizon League did. Rocco mentioned what a good job they've done getting 15 okay. in.
We're not doing the Ivy League. Let's go right out over to the Metro Atlantic, where Iona finally got on the court and looked great on Friday against Manhattan. But David did not look quite as good on Saturday, losing the rivalry series, which has kind of put Siena in a place where they, by winning percentage at least, they've got a significant lead in the conference, although there's such disparity in the amount of games played in this league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, Siena, no out-of-conference games. We didn't really know what to make of them. We thought that they had the best pieces. Still pretty much showing us that. Monmouth is looking good.
They didn't play this week.
They didn't play this week, but I just meant overall. Yeah. So
I guess
not a whole lot of movement.
Rocco, Kadish is coming out of nowhere with a sweep at Quinnipiac, and now 5-3, and assuming they can get enough games in, they only have 8 games, but maybe we need to look at them.
Yeah,
I know they've been hungry to play. They actually had a trip. I'm sorry, it was Quinnipiac who came to Canisius a couple weeks ago and did a trip to Niagara Falls, took a bunch of pictures. And about an hour from tip-off, they called off the whole weekend. There was a contact tracing issue. And then they finally got to play this last week. And if I'm not mistaken, they might actually play another series if they need to, but they're looking for dates. Canisius has 6 games scheduled right now. If they get them all in, they're good. They do play Fairfield, Manhattan, and Niagara in those 6. So they could come out of this with a pretty strong record if they keep playing well. They swept St. Peter's too, which that raises a little bit of an eyebrow.
Yeah, this conference is going to go wild if these games can remain on the schedule and just trying to get games in here over these next 2 weeks before their next 2.5 weeks before they get to the conference tournament. But they have teams like Siena, right, like Canisius that haven't even hit that 12-game mark yet. Becoming a little bit of a concern here.
Yeah, and Siena's been hit like 4 or 5 times.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even find very many stories to compare to them.
Yeah. New Mexico State.
Yeah, right, which is crazy too.
Rocco, over the Mid-American Conference, for the second week in a row, Toledo loses a game. This time it was a home game to Bowling Green.
Right. Yeah, well, big rivalry game, and I think we touched on this the last time Toledo got beat. They do have a style of play that is susceptible to an upset if they're not making outside shots, and it happened again. Also, the interesting thing about Toledo is, man, they've looked really bad when they lose, and they've lost a lot lately. But I think this Toledo game might have woke them up. I think, you know, Turner's still there, and he had offers from all the power – not all the power schools, but a lot of good power schools. And then he took his name out of the portal, decided to come back to Bowling Green, and they've got a nice little supporting cast. They played very, very well in that Toledo game. I watched most of it. And if you're looking for a sleeper in the MAC tournament, you cannot count this Bowling Green team out, especially with those seniors. That was one of the big things they said in the article after the game, was they knew it was their last chance to play Toledo unless it is in the MAC tournament. And they really played their hearts out. And I think that's a sign of what you might see from Bowling Green in the MAC tournament. So definitely a team to watch, even if they're like the 6 or 7 seed.
I thought they looked pretty good in beating Ball State, who had just come off of Toledo win recently themselves as well. So
yeah. Right. So they might be kicking it into a new gear now that we're, you know, this far into the year.
The upcoming schedule, we do see Toledo supposed to be at Buffalo on Friday night if that game is a go. Hopefully it is. And
I believe it is, yes. And they also announced this morning, I put it on Twitter, 10 new makeup games over the next week.
Ooh, good. More games.
So if you just go to the MAC website, you'll be able to find those. And I know 3 of those include Ohio, so they'll start making up a bunch of their games, which is another team capable of winning the conference tournament.
David, the MEAC here, we saw 2 games, Norfolk State with a sweep of Morgan State on the road to take control of the North Division and probably control this conference, because I think that those 2 teams are better than anybody in the South Division.
Yeah, I would agree with that. NCAA&T still undefeated in conference play, but again, substantially
you only play your own division here.
Yeah, so you only play your own division, and that's another thing similar to the Patriot League. I just don't know what to make of teams that don't play other teams or only play a couple of other teams.
Well, at least these teams play non-conference games, though. So.
Yeah. But I think Norfolk State has the best pieces, and it's sort of just their league to win. A nice weekend for them.
We don't
Morgan State team that was in front of them by 2 games.
We don't want to talk about these teams earning a trip to Dayton. They're going to be earning instead a trip to
Indianapolis.
But where is it? Where are they going to play the first 4 in West Lafayette,
I don't know.
I would have to check that too. They might have officially announced.
I think they said West Lafayette was one of 2 states they're going to use for the first 4. So that might be where they're going. Yeah. There's the upcoming schedule. I don't know if these games are actually on or not, but we could have a full slate of games this week in the MEAC,
which is a huge accomplishment.
If these games that are on the screen, there are actually a go, be nice to see North Carolina Central get some games in, because they're sitting there only 81 games, and we got to get them a few more games, get up to that 12.
Right.
Rocco, over in the Missouri Valley Conference, we do have a pair of final scores that are not on this screen. Number 1, not technically under the radar, but Loyola Chicago did just barely hold on by 2 points to beat Valpo tonight.
Wow.
And
Valpo, I was watching the end of that. Did you see what happened?
It's not under the radar, David. We're not allowed to discuss it.
We're talking about Valpo.
We have to talk about Valpo.
Okay. Talk about Valpo. Go ahead,
David. So Valpo hit what appeared to be a game-tying shot to force overtime with 1.1 seconds to go. It was waved off because they said he pushed off, and it wasn't much of a push, but it was called a push-off. And the basket was waved off, and that above the radar team won the game. Valpo's coach disagreed with the call.
Really?
Yeah.
The other thing that's not on the screen here, Drake got a battle tonight at Northern Iowa, but pulled out an 8-point win there. They are not under the radar. And Rocco, are you there yet on this Drake team for an at-large bid? Especially now that they do have a win against Loyola from last weekend.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, I've got them at this moment as a team going to either West Lafayette or wherever the other first 4 location is. They would be my third to last team as an at-large, just assuming Loyola Chicago in this example takes the auto bid. So Drake, I think pressure's on. They have more games left than Loyola Chicago, and we're not talking about them anyway. But Drake, even though they got the big win tonight, they still have the 4. Now, they did get some, I don't want to call it good news, but some news came out today about Bradley, where the reason why four of their regulars were out over the weekend and continue to will be out this week is they were arrested. And
it could be a very bad arrest too, but we won't go into it. Yeah.
Right. But it does include Elijah Childs, clearly their best player and an all Valley player. And if for some reason they get suspended throughout the rest of the year, Bradley's chances of three-peating pretty much are out the window. And also, turning it back to Drake, that's the big season finale that I've been looking at as, okay, it's going to be real hard for them to go at Bradley and sweep that. But if that happens, that becomes much more obtainable, I think, for the Bulldogs.
Yeah. The other problem with Drake, of course, is Tank Hempel is out for them. But they pulled out one of those Loyola ones without him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he could be back for the tournament too, which is going to be part of that at-large conversation if they're in the at-large conversation.
Which I can't imagine that they wouldn't be.
Well, if they win the Valley, they won't have to worry about that.
Okay,
they won't be the at-large conversation if they win the auto bid. Absolutely not.
That was my thinking.
Okay, got you.
The upcoming schedule, we already saw them there, the key games with Drake. It's hosting Evansville. That is the key games this weekend. Loyola, as mentioned, is off until the middle of next week or the end of next week. But David, let me run it to you for the Northeast Conference, which unlike last week, was a complete mess. I think we've suddenly almost found our four teams, with especially with Wagner, a huge sweep over the last 2 days on the road at Mount St. Mary's. And this is the team to beat now, that the Seahawks.
It really is. And I don't know, they weren't a team that I had been big on Bryant all year, and I still think I like them, but it's hard to not be impressed with what Wagner's done these last couple of weeks. And again, two huge wins to kind of put themselves in control for the conference tournament.
And not only wins, but in dominating fashion, Rocco. Yeah. I mean, they absolutely looked amazing, I thought, in these two games. 61-39 last night? I mean, that was ridiculous.
Very ridiculous. Yeah, and we know the formula, right, the three of us do, on what it takes to be successful late in the season, and it's coaching and defense. And right now they're playing the best defense in the NEC. That was something Mount St. Mary's was claiming coming into the series. But Wagner doing an even more effective rate, at least in league play, and getting just enough offense to get by. You know, I think it would be a great story. They haven't made the NCAAs in 17 years, and that was back in the 2003 tournament, and that's the only time they've ever made it. So Wagner working on some history right now. Yeah, possibly.
They've got SFPA allegedly this weekend if those games are a go. Meanwhile, hopefully we'll get Bryant back at the court with a very interesting series against Merrimack, who is the co-conference leader, just not eligible for the Northeast Conference.
Yeah, tournament. The first place team a year ago did not get to play in the CIT because it was not held. This year will also not get to play in a postseason tournament. Making them, when was the last time a first place team did not get to play in any sort of postseason tournament 2 years in a row? Wow.
Yeah, but they'll get there. There's a great future for this Merrimack program, I think.
Yeah, I would just love to see them in a postseason knockout format event. But,
maybe next year they should just have the preseason CIT and invite everybody who would have been in this year.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, let's do a 16-teamer, just kick off the year with a bang.
Oh, can we do that? College Insiders follows us. I don't know if they're watching, but if they're watching, let's do that.
Rocco, yeah,
propose it.
Rocco, we thought we had the game of the season so far coming up in the Ohio Valley this past weekend when Morehead State went to Belmont, but Belmont proved that they really don't even belong in this conference, I think, with what they did this weekend.
I mean, wow. Yeah, I was a little surprised it wasn't closer just because Morehead was on such a roll. But, you know, Belmont can do this to you. The other surprising thing was they did it with an inside attack. They shot almost twice as many twos as threes. They only made seven threes, and they really went to a balanced attack, really. Jacoby Wood came off the bench to lead the team in scoring, a freshman. So Belmont just showing they have just an array of weapons. Not only that, but Grayson Murphy's kind of been an unheralded player, but certainly probably an all Ohio Valley caliber guy. He had a triple-double, 13, 10, and 10. And so, you know, I think that's one of the reasons Belmont's so darn good is they just pass the ball and very patient, very team oriented. And then especially in a COVID year where it's really hard to have team chemistry, Belmont's figured that part out. And I think that not only makes them the heavy favorite in this league for the tournament bid, but also a very dangerous out in the NCAAs, wherever they land.
Okay, so Rocco, I asked you this about Winthrop earlier. I'll ask you the same question about Belmont. The strength of schedule is potentially a problem. 3-12, good God. Does this team get in if they do not win that last conference tournament game?
Yeah, the strength of schedule, you know, historically would be poor and probably a disqualifier. But I think this year, with only a handful of non-conference games, you have to look past that. I don't have confirmation from a committee member yet on that, but I do like the fact that a much bigger chunk landed in Q3. Unfortunately, nothing above Q3, but nine wins in Q3 and a little bit better net than Winthrop. I think they have a little bit more upside, because if they lost to a Murray or a Moorhead in the final, that would be a better loss than like a Radford.
And chance for two more Q3 wins with those last two games at EKU and at Moorhead. So it could be 11 going into the conference tournament final.
I don't want to count them out, that's for sure. They're going to be a really interesting case study.
Yeah, so this is where I am with Belmont. On the court, I think that they're easily one of the top 50 teams in the 40s, maybe even the top 40. On paper, that is a lousy profile.
Yeah. I just think there's a little bit of a special treatment you get if you only lose two or one games total. So if they do only lose in the tournament from here, it keeps them around. I'm not saying they'd get in. They probably wouldn't. The bubble's very crowded right now, and we could have chaos if there's more bids stolen than usual. We'll see how that all plays out.
Yeah. And it's
if all that happens,
I'll throw another number at you here. If they win out, assuming that they get these last four games and there's no cancellations, and then win the quarters and the semis in the OVC tournament, they will, heading into that OVC championship game, be on a 25-game winning streak.
It's hard to leave a team out.
Yeah, how do you leave out a team that won 25 out of their last 26 games?
Okay, I'm blanking on the year, but I want to say it was 16 or 17 when Murray State was 29-4 or 28-4. And their profile wasn't quite that bad. They only had four top 250 wins. This predated the net. So it also predated quads, and that Murray State team was ranked in the top 25. They lost coincidentally to Belmont on a last second shot in the NCAA tournament, was not selected. And we later learned were not even in the next four, weren't really looked at at all. Now their profile wasn't as bad as that, but there's a lot of similarities between that Murray State team and this Belmont team.
Well, you got to remember, it's different. This is one of the things about a committee, though, David. The committee changes every year. Those people that were on that committee, maybe a few left in the room, but you got new people in there that with new ways of looking at things, too. But here's the upcoming schedule.
Wasn't that also the year Tulsa got in and Washington?
The
champions didn't even get in.
I was trying to be nice and say that committee had no idea what it was doing, but I'll just say it outright. That committee had no idea what it was doing.
I don't think we had Marie in our
And Oral Roberts was like the first team out, I think.
Yeah, they were. Now, Oral Roberts had a case. They actually had some good wins that year.
Okay, we do need to keep moving here. We are way behind schedule, but Belmont has Jacksonville State and Tennessee Tech for its next two games. Let's jump over to the SoCon, because I do want to spend a little bit of time on this conference and then get through the last few of them quickly, because we had a crazy day today before we started this podcast of the SoCon for the fourth week in a row now, either Citadel or VMI has pulled an upset on the day that we did the Under the Radar podcast. And again, it happened. I think we went Citadel, VMI. This week was VMI's turn, knocking off first place UNC Greensboro. And on top of that, East Tennessee State, who had been playing well, continues to their struggles with a couple more losses. It is absolutely crazy. But I think I want to talk a little bit about this Chattanooga team, though, because they had an amazing pair of games this week, starting with Monday night's game against East Tennessee State. If you didn't see the end of this, it was wild. ETSU down by 1 point at the free throw line with 4 seconds left. I'm sorry, down by 2 points at the free throw line with 4 seconds left. intentionally misses the free throw. East Tennessee State gets the rebound, kicks it out, wide open, three-point shot, it goes. East Tennessee State wins the game, except their first-year head coach decided to call timeout as soon as the rebound was grabbed before the three-pointer. I don't know why you call timeout in that situation, because I'd rather be on offense with chaos going on than with setting up a play. So there was no three-pointer. He set up a play. The play was a much worse shot that they got that they had no shot at going, and Chattanooga wins the game. And then Chattanooga follows it up tonight, Rocco, by being down 12 points with 4 minutes left, going on a 12-0 run to end regulation and winning it overtime.
Yeah, against the worst team in the league. Yeah, funny team, right? I think they're just doing more with less. You know, Lamont Paris won't win SoCon Coach of the Year, I don't think, because Dan Earl's got that clinched. But he's done a phenomenal job. Think back to the non-conference when they miraculously started 9-0 in a bunch of close games, some of them against really good teams like the win at UAB, some of them really bad teams like the win at Tennessee State. But it carried over. You know, they had the little drama when David Jean Baptiste, their best player, left and went to the portal, who's gone a couple weeks, then decided to come back. And now they've got that mojo back that they had in the non-league, six straight now, and Greensboro on the road this Saturday. So, you know, Chattanooga plays a physical style. They have strong guards. And I think they're a team that can grind you down. And in a SoCon tournament setting, they're the kind of team that doesn't waste a lot of energy. I think they could win three games in 3 days and grind them out. It won't be pretty, but they can win the tournament, I think.
Yeah. Greensboro, you mentioned, they've got the Chattanooga game Saturday. They have West Carolina next week. Chattanooga at Mercer next week, allegedly. Furman, though, David Sunley tied for the league leading the loss column, at least, allegedly, with games at Mercer and against Citadel next week.
It's hard for
me. And VMI.
To,
VMI yeah. and Citadel back-to-back. That's a tough back-to-back, even though they are at home. But they're getting those two teams back-to-back.
And I know this is an odd thing to say since Furman and Greensboro are the top two teams, but I've kind of been disappointed on them as a whole. I thought that especially Furman wasn't just going to be the best team in the SoCon, but could be at large caliber good. Neither team anywhere near that discussion. But the ceiling, I don't think, is any lower. It's just that they haven't played up to it the way that we thought that they would, or I thought that they would. Still a potential dangerous round of 64 team, either one of them, if one of those two gets there.
Or Chattanooga gets there, quite honestly. I think where Tennessee State, if they could turn, I think whoever in this conference is going to be a problem for somebody in the first round.
Yeah.
VMI just raining threes on
somebody. VMI would be a problem for somebody in the first round if they made it.
VMI is a problem at any point. For like everybody. Rocco made that observation. They're annoying.
Rocco, Southland awesome. Conference, it's still the four-team battle. Barely, after Nicholls State on Saturday, really had to sweat out Southeastern Louisiana.
They did. What a game. You were tweeting about it, Chad. Yeah. And I turned it on the last 5 minutes or so and the overtime. Man, Southeast Louisiana, they just look so dejected. I think they treated that like their Super Bowl. You know, these two schools are pretty good rivals and, you know, local Louisiana teams. They left their hearts on the court. Sela has not played that hard all year, I promise you that. So Nicholls survives an underrated close game in a rivalry, throw your record out the window setting. And but Nicholls, sadly, you know, they've got the best path. Central Arkansas, Houston Baptist, New Orleans, and McNeese left. They got to win all those. Whereas the other top three are going to have to face each other. So that's what it comes down to. And I think the big game's on the 24th, which is a week from tonight, which would be Sam Houston
at
Abilene, which would be a return game that Sam won the first time.
Right. And there's the upcoming schedule. You see some of those games that were out for tonight, for example, went off because of all the weather issues and everything going on there. And hopefully we can get these games in this weekend. This is a very Texas-centric conference, as you know.
Yeah.
Right. So the Stephen F. Austin and Incarnate Word game has been postponed on Saturday already. Right. But that's the only one I know for sure.
David, the SWAC, we've didn't get much in terms of games, and Prairie View has been shut down for a little while now. But yeah. Suddenly, you know, it, well, I guess continue on. We didn't have Southern Prairie View or Jackson State play this week. They remain tied. It's kind of exactly the same spot we were last week when we discussed this conference. So should we just move on? Maybe yeah, look at the upcoming schedule.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dave.
Go ahead, Rocco.
I was just going to say the bad, unfortunate news. I was really looking forward to Texas Southern Prairie View tomorrow. And they, yeah, the weather canceled it. So they hopefully can get it made up because they're the two Texas schools. They're only an hour and a half apart. So hopefully that can get made up. Texas Southern really needs it. They're two games out, and they're going to have to take them out head to head to catch them.
Right. And I would like to see Jackson State get a few more tests here. That interesting. If this game is on for Saturday, hosting Grambling has had a little bit of life. So,
yep, that's on. Yep.
So if we do our circle a game this week in this SWAC, that would be the one I'd circle. Rocco, over in the Summit League, a little bad news today for South Dakota State, even though they are in sole position of first place now, they lost one of their top players.
Yeah, so leading scorer Noah Friedel announced today via Zoom in a press conference that he's suffering from severe depression and anxiety and is going to take the rest of the year off for mental health. I give him a tremendous amount of credit for doing that at this time where I'm sure the pressure is mounting more and more on him to perform and everything else. Who knows what's going on in his life? But we saw this happen last year, if you remember, at Ohio State with their point guard. Now he's playing for Marquette. And you just feel for a lot. I mean, it just kind of makes you rethink about, you know, what these kids are going for, to going through to try to help their own careers and help their schools. But also it's just, you know, it's a crazy time. So hopefully he gets healthy and we can see him next season.
Yeah. They did split that series at Oral Roberts this weekend, which is a tough trip. The disappointing news, I think, in terms of on the court, David, South Dakota gets swept by North Dakota.
Yeah, real kind of surprising there. The Yotes were really appeared to be running downhill. They had the split series with South Dakota State. But, I mean, they're still sort of in the hunt, just one game back in the loss column. But those were two winnable games that you thought would – I mean, I was expecting them to get both of them.
Allegedly, we are going to have South Dakota State at North Dakota State, which would be the top two teams now, especially if South Dakota is starting to fall off. Oral Roberts and South Dakota, we could have some pretty good games this week if we get these games into this conference. And so definitely circle the Summit League Friday and Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, and again, the Broncos and Chiefs, that's going to be good.
Yeah, we got a little AFC West action there on Friday, too.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, with the loss of Friedel, that brings South Dakota State back to a more, you know, beatable position. They still have two really solid players in Shireman, who averages a double-double, and they still have the preseason player of the year, who is Douglas Wilson. But North Dakota State and South Dakota State should tell us a lot this week. Also, I would just throw out there a team that's playing the best defense in the league and has their top scorer back, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. Brandon McKissick, he's back on the team. They're playing great, playing amazing defense. They beat North Dakota State 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and they only have Denver left, and then we'll see what they're really made of against South Dakota State at the end. But I think the league's open now, for like a lot more open than it has been all year with this news.
Yeah, this is we could go five deep in terms of teams that could make good runs this conference, or maybe even six if North Dakota's suddenly got something put together here with what they did with the sweep of the Yotes.
That's exactly what I put in my notes, Chad. I think you're reading my
I honestly did not read them, but let's jump over to the old conference schizophrenia here in the Sun Belt, where every week something different happens. Although maybe for the first time in a while, actually the team that was in first place got the sweep this weekend. Rocco, Texas State, you've been high them all year, and I think I'm ready to come along after they swept Arlington this week.
Yeah, Texas State. You know, theme's been defense tonight. That's another team clearly playing the best defense in across the Sun Belt. You know, they held Arlington to 56 the first night, scoring went up the next day, but they had, you know, cruise control status most of the way game two. And, you know, I thought with it being a little bit of a rivalry there as the two schools in Texas, they might drop one, and they really just brought it. I do want to say this Arkansas State team has been playing outstanding themselves, four in a row. Which
is crazy.
Right. They finally got healthy. I think the series, and it's in Jonesboro this weekend. Now, unfortunately, they were supposed to play three times this week. The first one got knocked out by weather, which was going to be at Texas State. Now this is on, and luckily it's in Arkansas, because I think as long as Texas State can travel out, they should be good to go. So let's hope that gets played.
Also, if we get these games in the East Division there, South Alabama and Appalachian State, now the top two teams of that East Division.
Yeah.
This conference tournament will be seeded by division, so you're playing for basically for a one seed as well. There'll be two one seeds. Huge. So good. And South Alabama, a nice sweep of a Troy team that has knocked a few teams off this season, even though they're in sixth place there. That Troy team's had some life, so good job for them sweeping Troy last week. David, the WAC. I don't think we got any games in it. Oh, we got a couple games. We have no game of note, I guess. It was New Mexico State got split their series in Seattle, but UTRGV was still on shutdown after the tragic loss of their head coach. The Lopes have been on shutdown. I don't know.
Yeah, just a disaster of a year for the WAC. Chicago State opting out of the season. What happened at UTRGV, as you already mentioned, New Mexico State can't find anywhere to play. Seattle having a little bit better luck, but not much. And then you've got
Seattle can't even find teams to play this week. So because their series at RGV is off.
Yeah, and they're trying as we have confirmed, but. Just the graphic there. You have five eligible teams for the NCAA tournament, and are we even going to have that many if New Mexico State can't find enough games?
Well, they do have a couple more weeks, and Rocco, if these games get in this week against Utah Valley, we're going to get. I think New Mexico State's probably going to get there.
I think so. Yeah, they're dead set on getting there. I've been reading a lot about their program and what's happening behind the scenes. Obviously they can't control if there's another outbreak, but God forbid that happening. And I think by the time they get to the tournament, if they can just get a string of a couple weeks together of consistent playing games, you've seen this across college basketball. When a team's shut down off and on, they can't get any kind of rhythm or flow going. That's really what New Mexico State needs, I think. If they can pull that off and roll into the WAC tournament, whether there's a few more losses or not, I think that gives them a legitimate shot. So they know their rotations. They can have that chemistry and rhythm. Because I think that's what it's going to take to be able to knock off a Grand Canyon.
Yeah, I mean, they've got talent there. I mean, guys like Jabari Rice and team, they're tons of talent. But how about the Lopes? Yeah. Are they back in action? I've got them on the schedule list with Al Baptist. So it'd be nice to see them, see them get a couple games in. Real quick, we're going to go to our final conference.
Yes.
Of course, we've got to do our quick check-in on the Front Range, where Colorado State continues to maintain the lead. But it was a bad week for the Front Range. Only Colorado picked up the only team to pick up a win in the Front Range games at Stanford.
Real disappointing week, especially Denver losing to the Leathernecks. Good grief. But Colorado losing it. I mean, Colorado.
We have a little question, though. Just a few minutes ago, Wyoming won a game in Colorado Springs. It's not even on the screen yet. So does that count as a Front Range win or not? Because they were playing New Mexico there.
That's
on
a
Air Force
range team. Like New Mexico's on the other side of the range.
Wyoming was on the road in Colorado playing a game. I mean,
yeah.
Now I think they would, wouldn't that have to count as like a non D1?
Maybe it's like a non D1 game.
Yeah. It's a non D1.
Yeah.
but it should go in the column somewhere.
Colorado State Air
League game.
The last two Front Range games are Colorado State Air Force, not coming up until the following weekend, so we're not going to have any Front Range this week, other than Wyoming, New Mexico again tomorrow night in Colorado Springs. Let's go to our top 10 list here. We've got some honorable mentions teams that received votes but did not quite crack the top 10. They were Louisiana Tech, Colgate, with that 11 net, North Texas.
Oh my God.
The Lopes.
Oh my God.
James Madison and Vermont.
Do you know what this means? the 10 teams I voted for are the 10 teams in the top 10, probably not in the same order. I don't think that's ever happened.
Number 10, the Liberty Flames, just barely.
All right, that's my 10th team.
Number 9, Abilene
that's
Christian.
That's my 9th team. All right, here we go.
Number 8, Akron.
I think, I don't remember. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Number 7, UC Santa Barbara, the Gauchos. And coming at number 6, we had Toledo.
Toledo still, underperforming, still like
underperforming,
that team,
but still up there. Number 5, we got Wright State, red hot team out of the Horizon League.
Yeah, they are scorching. Yeah.
At number 4, we have Winthrop with that only with that one loss. How about another one loss team at number 3, Belmont?
Belmont, yeah. And again, no surprise there might only, is there room for all 4 of those inside the bubble? Because we know who the
number 2 is Western Kentucky. Now, again, Loyola Chicago was not eligible for this list, so obviously number 1 is Drake. That the votes were before the games today, but Drake did survive against Northern Iowa. So on that note, let's go to final thoughts. Rocco?
Yeah, well, quick thought on David's comment. Can all 4 get inside the bubble? It's a pipe dream. Obviously, we covered both Belmont and Winthrop scenario. But, you know, let's just have some fun with that for a second. And let's say the whole bubble collapses like a house of cards. And let's just say a bunch of the power leagues decide to assign their AQs and something happens and they have to call off their conference tournaments, or they just decide it's not worth going through. And then there's no bid stealers. Then all of a sudden, hey, a Winthrop or a Belmont might get a little more interesting to the committee because those teams around the cut line won't have that last chance to play themselves in. So anyway, there's a theory for you. My other final thought was, Eastern Washington, again, a team that's really impressed the last couple of weeks. I've been noticing on my bracket exercises, they're slowly creeping up to 16. Right now, they're my best number 16. But I think if they keep playing like this and enough other leagues, there'll be some demolition derby and then maybe some demolition derby in conference tournaments. They could work their way up to about a 14, I think, is their ceiling. And I think with their outside shooting and their stellar defense, they could really make a team sweat in the first round. So really just impressed with the way they're playing.
Yeah, they are. I agree with you. They are a 16 now. But although you got to watch out for Prairie View creeping up that 16 seed line too, Rocco.
I'm kind of serious about that.
They were by
like them
7 team all season. They kind of creeped up to 66 and 65 recently.
Same here.
David.
It's just, I've kind of belabored this before, but I'll go ahead and mention it again. And especially in the case of Belmont, but probably Winthrop too, two teams that I think are 40-ish good, top 40 good, definitely top 50 good, maybe Belmont even a little better than that, that just because of circumstances that are largely not their fault and beyond their control, just didn't get the chance to get those kinds of wins on their resume. I don't know how the committee is going to react to that. I know how I think that they have tended to react to that in the past, and that's to not take them. But after listening to Rocco and then even John Tytel, even with these weak schedules, even with no top 150 wins in the case of Belmont, or I think Morehead State's around in the 140s, will the committee take them anyway if they need that at-large bid? I just don't know when you compare them to the rest of the field. But it's just kind of unfortunate because in a normal year with a full slate of out-of-conference games and the normal number of bye games where they would have been the team on the road, I think both of those teams are able to win one or two of them, and that would have probably been enough based on everything else they've done.
I think that's where how much the committee weighs some of these predictive metrics and some of these offensive and defensive efficiencies may come into play there, which is, for example, why I like these two Missouri Valley teams, I think, a lot more than Rocco, you do even. I look at some of those metrics on those teams, and they just they blow away Winthrop and Belmont, honestly.
Belmont's good. Definitely. Belmont's got 3 really good players.
But their metrics aren't anywhere near Loyola Chicago's.
They're not. And I don't know if that's opponents because it is adjusted efficiency. They play in a rather weak conference, and they played a week out of conference schedule.
And they're also
their strength of schedule is in the 300s.
Also nowhere near Colgate's. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
And it's a one loss.
Well, we already covered Colgate.
We're talking about one loss teams. Colgate. Yeah. On that note, I do want to take the chance to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back in tomorrow with a bracket rundown show, next week with our season finale of Under the Radar. Do you believe that? Season finale of Under the Radar next week. And then we're going to go into championship week mode. But on behalf of David Griggs, Rocco Miller, you can check him out also at bracketeer.org. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.